Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. And before we proceed any further, a huge thank you to Bev Capshaw for hosting last week's show, during which she moderated a fascinating discussion with Zoo Tampa's Lisa Smith and Tampa Bay Times journalist Mac Chesnez, chiefly about the endangered elusive Florida panther, using Chesnez's recent Times piece as a jumping-off point. I highly recommend listening to this show on the WMNF archives and reading Chesnez's story. You can probably reach that by searching Tampa Bay Times and Florida Panthers, and it should pop up amongst other entries there. My guest today is Art Shaw, founder and director of Safe Paws Rescue. Based in St. Petersburg while serving the broader Tampa Bay area, Safe Paws is a small but mighty rescue that's distinctive in multiple ways. Towards that end, they have a slogan of sorts: we have no buildings, no employees, no benefactors, just a handful of hardworking volunteers. That motto addresses a fundamental Safe Paws operating principle, projecting a no baloney approach that's focused on the work, helping animals, helping find them homes, helping them stay in homes, and more. So indeed, their stated mission is to help rescue, rehabilitate, and rehome needy pets. The rescue is perennially on the lookout for folks who are willing to foster, offering an array of enticements for those who step up to foster, including food, toys, veterinary care, items that commonly are provided to foster parents, and more singular perks, such as consultations if needed with an animal behaviorist. Of course, a parallel, no less important objective of Safe Paws is securing adoptions. An adopter is, of course, to carry out those adoptions. We'll likely discuss some dogs currently available for adoption is part of a conversation about Safe Paws Rescue when I speak with founder Art Shaw in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Meanwhile, coming up later in today's program, I'll speak with Keith Overton, owner of OCC Roadhouse and Museum in Clearwater, which is playing host to a big adoption event this Sunday called, fittingly enough, Pet Adoption Sunday. Starting at noon on August 11th, Pet Adoption Sunday will offer, among other things, vendors, raffles, and, of course, rescues with adoptable animals. More details on that event and the conversation with Keith Overton a bit later in today's show. Right now, though, let's discuss rescue with Art Shaw as practiced by the organization he launched, Safe Paws Rescue. With a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing DJ at WMNF, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Art Shaw to Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Art.
Hi, good morning, Duncan.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals, and great to have you in person, which happens all too rarely on this show, so really great to be face-to-face and actually speaking with the person directly.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
So it seems to me a guy doesn't launch an animal rescue in what might otherwise be considered his retirement years, unless there's quite a long-standing passion for dogs or some other kind of important history. So tell me about the earliest Art Shaw years as it pertains to dogs and maybe other animals, and how we eventually ended up here.
Well, growing up, even as a young kid, my dad was always bringing some sad-looking dog home, mainly dogs, but we sometimes had cats. And anything that was showed up anywhere near us, if he saw it, it was coming home with us. So I learned to love animals at a young age. And I've owned animals, mostly dogs, most of my life. But back about 8 years ago, there was a lady walking in our neighborhood, and she was walking this dog. And then the next thing I know, she's got a different dog, and then a different dog. So I talked to her, and it come to about she had a local rescue. Well, to make a long story short, I kind of helped her for a while, and then I helped another lady, and there were some things I weren't totally in love with that they were doing, so I decided maybe I needed to do this for myself. So that's when the idea popped up, and the rest, as they say, is history, because it just started from scratch, and away we went, and that's, you know, now we've been officially a rescue for over 6 years.
It's a great story, and I want to back up. We're going to get more into what's happening now with Safe Paws, of course, but really interested right off the bat that your dad went around and picked up all kinds of animals. That's a strong lesson by itself. Was there anything particular about those animal situations or about your dog that made him particularly inclined to bring home animals of one kind or another?
I think just that they were in sad situations. This goes back a lot of years because I'm not a young man, but at one time he owned a TV repair shop in a suburb of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and they always seemed to have flooding and heavy rains and stuff. They were near a creek or river or something. And one time this dog just showed up at the back door, and it was either barking or scratching. He had a little shop, my dad did. And he brought it in, and I laughed because he named it Bob because that was his coworker. But he brought this thing home, and my mom was like, oh, my, this poor thing. It was just bedraggled. It was, you could tell it was starving. And we had that dog for probably, another 7 or 8 years after that. And,
wow.
It was a wonderful...
That's great. Well, it sounds like there was a, really a great model and a great lesson there in your dad. It just sounded like any creature that needed help, he'd provide it, whatever it took.
Yeah, yeah. He would, you know, if he saw a squirrel fall out of a tree, he might go try and help that if he could. And,
yeah.
Or a stray cat, that was common. And it's just his nature, and I just kind of picked up on those same things growing up.
Yeah, no, that's... great, great lesson. I mean, so much, you know, dealing with animals, especially if you can get kids early on thinking in those terms or exposed to that and just cultivating compassion and empathy and whatever, that makes a big difference. And just, you know, you're a classic example of all these years later, how that's still playing out and it's still the emotion you still felt recalling that early story that your dad helped that one animal.
Yeah, we've had our share of stories, too, with the rescue, I can tell you that.
Yeah, well, I hope to hear some of those for sure. So so did you, like, all throughout your life then, after growing up in that kind of family and with those kinds of examples, did you pretty much, as you went into your later years beyond growing up and then leaving the house and starting a career and all these kind of key phases of your life, was there always a dog at your side pretty much? Or
pretty much our entire life. And as a young man and young married man in Chicago, we moved more times than we probably needed to or chose to. But we always, we see and rescue too many times when dogs are, people say, well, I'm moving and I can't take my dog. Well, we took a dog or dogs every time. It doesn't matter where we moved. We just didn't move somewhere where you couldn't have them. Is that, we think it's that simple. And I know it's a little more complex than that, but we were never going to leave a dog behind, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's always a tough story to hear or read or see posted somewhere where someone's moving and they can't take the dog. And you just think, well, I don't know their situation, so it's hard. You know, right. I don't want to be too judgmental.
Right.
But I might be a little judgmental. Not saying not too judgmental, but just enough, just because you feel like, is there no other means to solve this? Because, you know, sometimes the dogs we're leaving behind, their fate is unknown and not necessarily always great.
Yeah, it can be very tough, and we've seen a ton of this in the last year or so, especially more than ever, maybe because back during COVID, so many people were staying home and they wanted dogs.
Yeah.
And now with the you know, especially in the Bay Area with the rent increases and somewhat of the inflation, unfortunately, people are losing homes, they're losing apartments, they're living in cars. There's a lot of negative things out there. And it's the dogs, unfortunately, or the animals in general, dogs or cats, that are being left behind or turned into shelters. And the shelters are all over, basically full or overflowing at this time.
Yeah, it's very tough. It's a tough situation. For people who might just be joining us now, let me let folks know this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you did just tune in, my guest is Art Shaw, founder and director of Safe Paws Rescue. It's based in St. Petersburg, which serves the broader Tampa Bay area. And it's a small but, as I say, mighty rescue that's distinctive in multiple ways. And we'll be discussing some of those ways presently. Their chief aim, of course, is to find forever homes for the animals they rescue, but they do more than that as well, which we'll also cover. If you have questions for Art or would like to offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj at wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So I'm curious, as you were describing some of your stories and moving around and stuff, now what did you do for a living, Art?
Actually, in the early days, I was, well, it's funny, when I was just out of high school, I was actually managed a pet shop.
Oh, wow.
A small pet shop. And then I eventually stayed in retail in other areas and became kind of retail management positions with several companies in Chicagoland. And eventually this evolved into, I became, I guess you could call me an outside salesman, where I traveled around and mostly within the Chicagoland area, and then we moved to Michigan as a promotion, and I was covering a lot of area in Michigan. So I was gone some nights, but that had nothing to do with, you know, the animals we had. In fact, we moved two dogs with us from when we moved from Chicago to Michigan. So
yeah. And what did you like most about doing that kind of work?
I think it was the fact that I wasn't locked down into a sitting in an office all day. Some people are made for that. Some people are made for factories. I just felt like neither one was ever going to work for me.
Right. You wanted to be out and about. And
I was able to have a lot of flexibility to go out and do and call on accounts or create new accounts. And in the process, I enjoyed meeting people.
And yeah, you sound like you're kind of a sociable, gregarious type.
I am to a point,
yeah.
But some people feel like too often my conversations end up going back to the animals. But
he's bringing up dogs again.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's true. It's
but that's
who I
what
am.
We want for people like you. Are we want people bringing up, you know, coming back around to the dogs and like, hey, can you foster this dog? By the way, after we've talked about the weather and politics and sports and
right.
whatever else.
I mean, it is who I am, and it is my passion. You know.
Yeah, that's great. So when did you actually retire then?
We retired. My wife and I both managed, luckily, through planning and some luck, we retired early. We retired back in 01.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And she had taught for 25 years and managed to cover some additional years of a retirement plan and for her. And we had some investments that happened to do well. And so for a while, we were snowbirds coming down to Chicago, to Florida, but living in Michigan. And eventually, we just decided it was too much twice a year to pack up and move all your, not everything, but a lot of stuff back and forth. And
sure.
So we ended up in St. Pete area, Clearwater first for a couple years. But we've been full-time down here for about 12, 13 years now.
And what initially brought you out to Florida when you began that snowbirding pattern?
Actually, initially, I think it was because a combination of we were getting tired of winters, which Michigan is known for, and then the other factor that brought us this way mainly was because my wife's mother lived down here, and she was a snowbird. She had her own condo down here that she came down every winter.
I see. So you saw the snowbird thing working out pretty well, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's great. So you retired in 01. So when did you first start thinking about creating your own rescue?
I think it was about 8 years ago, because that's when I said...
When you saw the lady with a different dog every day?
Yeah, I saw her walking back and forth, and I started questioning her, and it turns out she was rescuing some dogs, and that led to me meeting another lady that was trying to also rescue dogs. And I think the thing I learned most from those situations was I had the passion already, but I felt like with my business background, to me, the whole key was you had to be able to find people to help, because we're 100% volunteers. Nobody gets a paycheck, myself included. And another big factor is you've got to constantly find ways to bring money into the organization to pay for all the expenses for the dogs. It's not uncommon for us to have a veterinary, one dog go in and have surgery and spend $1,000. So...
Jeez.
Managing finances is one of the things I saw as a problem with one of the women, and I just felt like I had enough business expertise or financial expertise to make sure that we always had enough funds available, and that was a pledge I made to my early volunteers.
That's really interesting, because one of the things we've talked about a few times, well, more than a few times actually over many years here on this show, is how much difference it can make when an animal organization, especially a smaller one, the person leading it or among the person leading it does have a business background or some kind of business acumen, as opposed to when they don't, but they're, you know, they're well-meaning and earnest and love animals, but sometimes things just get away from you, and then especially on a smaller operation like that, you can never kind of like sort of catch up and go back and sort of, so you're always scrambling, you're always in a crisis mode.
Right.
So it makes a huge difference to have that kind of business background, I'm sure you've found.
Yeah, we've seen some of those situations out there, unfortunately, where the intentions were great, the people had a big heart, but if they can't raise the funds on an ongoing basis one way or another to support the mission, then they fail, or they, or as you say, they end up in crisis mode a lot, and that's something we, yeah, we choose to avoid as much as possible.
And your model, I think, pretty much enables you to avoid crisis, frequent crisis, or any kind of crisis probably to speak of.
Yeah, we kind of look at it as this. I'm always planning 6 months ahead financially.
Yeah.
And not next week or next month. And actually, one of those early ladies called me one time and said, what am I going to do? She called me early in the morning and says, I don't have any dog food.
Mm.
I have bags of dog food in inventory right this minute.
Yeah.
Okay. If somebody needs, a new dog comes along and it needs food or any other supplies, I've got it. And that's all part of, in my opinion, planning. And when I got my first volunteers, I actually said to these people, I said, you know, I'll promise you a couple things. We'll always try to do it right. We will make mistakes, but we'll correct them when we do. I said, I will make sure that we all never run out of money. And they all looked at me like, what, are you rich? And I'm like, no, no way. My wife and I have a fixed income, but if I had to, I would go out and knock on doors just and ask people for money. But yeah, we've never had to, because we always start planning far enough ahead that we know we're ready. So
yeah, and it's just that kind of planning and sort of, you know, you're preempting the kind of thing where you don't have money and you're like the woman that has a place to call. Thank God she called someone who has food and could help and step up. But,
yeah,
you know, it's you just see that all too frequently. And again, it's mostly from people who couldn't be nicer, couldn't be more well-meaning, but that's just they don't have that kind of business acumen, or they didn't plan ahead. And as a result, they're in trouble, and sometimes, of course, the animals under their care are in trouble. So
yeah, if they can't find the help, unfortunately, those are animals that generally speaking, may end up getting surrendered to a shelter, and the shelter environment is never fun for dogs, and and a lot of them have very stressful situations when they go there, and as we all know, when there's more dogs than there are kennels, dogs get put to sleep.
Yeah,
it happens.
It's a horrible numbers game. Yeah. So let me just read this email that just came in. It says, thank you, Mr. Shaw, for doing such important work. What are ways I can support the rescue if I don't have much money to donate?
We always need volunteers or foster homes. Those are both critical, and neither one costs that person or any person money.
Yeah, and I guess to find out more about that, they go to safepawsrescue.com?
That's correct, or our email is safepaws.florida@gmail.com.
Okay, so they can contact and say, hey, unfortunately, like this emailer here, like, I'd like to help out, but I don't have the kind of cash maybe to make a donation.
Right.
But you're saying they could volunteer and or they could foster, and that would be a huge help,
yep,
just as much maybe as a financial thing the next time.
Yep.
Okay, that's great. So as you contemplated the idea of launching a rescue, were there sort of key principles and attributes that you already had in mind before you launched, where you just thought, I want to make sure, again, we're solid financially and we don't find ourselves in a crisis situation? But were there things that were influenced by other rescues or other, or just other business models or business experience yourself had?
Well, I think a couple other major factors in the beginning were I was determined to make it a volunteer-only situation. There are some big, shall we say, dog rescue organizations in this country where there's some people making some pretty big paychecks. And we've found, and that was my theory, and it's proven pretty straight, that when I can honestly look somebody in the eye and say, you know, we have nobody getting a paycheck here, not a big paycheck, but not even a little paycheck.
Yeah.
So the point to that is, and we try to promote this, if somebody donates a dollar, that dollar helps dogs.
Yeah.
Not 37 cents or 23 cents.
It's not processed by some percentage of what goes where. And
right. No. Yeah. I mean, our overhead is minimal. We pay for a storage unit, which is we need for all the supplies we hold on to.
Sure. Yeah.
And we have to have insurance, but beyond those two factors, we can honestly say all the money helps dogs directly, and that's made a difference, I feel, in the way people look at us, and when they donate, they feel comfortable, you know.
And I'm guessing, given that that's how you've built this and launched this and maintained it since you got started, that someone could, like, look at your books and say, well, that's exactly what's happened. I mean, you know, here's what they've received in donations or other monies, and here's what they've spent,
Oh yeah,
and there's no funny business in between.
No, in fact, we're a Florida corporation, which we had to become first, so we could also become what they call a 501c3.
Sure.
Which is a nonprofit under IRS regulations. We are allowed to have money in the bank. What we are not allowed to do is to have a quote profit. The money in the bank is simply reserves, as I talked about before, because you never know what's coming on the next day or next week or next month.
A weather event just a few days ago could have affected things, just as it's affected, some rescues or other animal organizations.
Yeah, we're probably lucky in that respect, although it could have an impact in a couple other ways. We do not have kennels. That's a choice. We have all our dogs are in foster homes.
Right.
And for several reasons. Number one, it would cost $2 million now, frankly, to buy the land and build a shelter. And there's a lot of regulations and laws that you have to obey to even build that facility. Then you've got the expense of manning it with people that are going to want to get paid.
Yeah.
And lastly, another factor to that is foster homes allow a dog to learn how to live in a peaceful, safe home, because they may have been on the streets, they may have been in an abusive situation, they may have gotten lost and ended up in a shelter and nobody came and picked them up, and even the shelter environment's stressful because there's too many dogs and there's a lot of them that are crying and barking and fussing and,
super stressful. What really, it sounds like since you've made that conscious decision not to have any kind of kennels or have any kind of building, obviously, so it's really so much relies on fostering.
Yes, fostering is critical.
So tell us about, I kind of touched on this in the opening, talk about what a foster for safe paws gets in support of their effort to foster that dog. If they take that dog, they're getting what as a promise to look after that dog.
Yeah, first of all, we do have an application process. That's necessary.
Sure.
They fill out an application. We review it. We generally want to meet with them. If they have pets already in the house, we need to meet those.
We want to see the house probably, too.
We want to see the house. And yeah. I always make the joke. I say, I don't care if you've got a week and a half's dirty laundry sitting in the corner or if you got dust on your counters, that's not the point. What I'm really looking for is things like, is this a safe environment? I once went into a house where they were doing a lot of remodeling, and there was a huge hole in the floor where a dog could have fallen through and gotten injured.
Geez. Yeah.
And I went into another house where there were some bare wires hanging one time. So we're looking for a safe environment. We're also, when we can get a home that has a fenced yard, we're looking to see if the fence is secure. Okay. And then after we do that process, we will call that person when we have a dog available that we think fits their needs. Because sometimes people are like, I can only have a little dog. I can only have an old dog. I only want a young dog. And once we agree to place the dog there, We do a meet and greet to make sure everybody's going to
get along. Yeah.
And then we provide actually everything a dog could possibly need. No different than the dog in my own home. They get dog food, they get wet food, they get treats, they get toys, they get a dog bed, collars, leashes, harnesses. They get training if needed. Behavior is if needed. All veterinary care. All they need to do is provide the love and the place for the animal. That's it.
And is there any kind of a term that's expected? Like once you've met them and inspected everything and said, okay, these people seem good and I feel safe having one of our dogs be fostered here.
Right.
Do they take that dog on for a minimum time or some sort of term at all? Or what's the expectation in that regard?
Well, 90% of the time we would prefer that they leave that open. We get a lot of times a new foster is going to say to us, well, how long will I be fostering? And we have to be honest with them.
Yeah.
It could be 2 or 3 weeks. It could be 6 months.
Right.
There is no way to predict.
Depends on if there's an adoption match that's made for that dog.
Exactly.
And that'll determine like how long that possible range would be.
Right. And we sometimes we embrace those too. We sometimes have what we call temporary fosters because there are times when a regular foster goes on vacation.
Sure.
And wherever they're going, maybe they can't take their dog. Take our dog, I should say.
Right.
So again, we don't have a kennel to put him in. There are cases where we have to go to put an animal in boarding, but if we do, it's for a very limited term. time. When I first started, we had a few dogs that stayed in boarding a little bit longer than we liked, but at least those were dogs that we saved, and that boarding situation beat where they came from.
Yeah.
By a wide margin.
Right. You're still ahead of the game by any...
We saved a life,
yeah,
basically.
For sure.
So,
yeah.
But when people, if people come to me and say, well, I don't want a dog more than a month, so a lot of times we may not even go with that unless we can work out a situation, as they might just agree to be a temporary foster when somebody else goes on vacation. You know?
All right, well, it looks like we might have a call. Let's take a call and get someone else involved in the conversation.
Okay.
Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Art Shaw.
Hi, my name is Terry. Art knows me very well. We've fostered about 20 animals with them.
Wow.
And one thing that I wanted to mention that Art hasn't touched on for all pet owners everywhere is please put your pet financial situation in your will, because after you die, I have fostered so many animals that their pet parents have died and nobody was around to accept the animal.
Yeah.
And they're ending up in a rescue with loud dogs barking and they're scared to death and they don't know what to do. And also in your will, if you have nobody else to leave money to and you love animals, put a rescue in your will. It's so important.
I'm thinking just off the top of my head, Safe Paws Rescue might be one good place to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But no, you're absolutely right, Terry. And we've done a bunch of shows over many, many years. There are organizations that help people create those kind of wills or have pre-made documents to sort of specify who's going to care for the dog or how the dog's going to be fed or veterinary care. And it's so important because, like you say, most people don't think about that. I'm going to have to let you go, Terry. I'm not sure where you are, but we've got a lot of noise on the line now.
Okay.
Thanks,
Terry. But thanks so much for your call.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, so that's
a good point.
Yeah, it's a really, really important point. You can go to our website, talkinganimals.net, and you can search. There's a pretty good searchable database, and you can search for pet wills, pet trusts, those kind of things, and at least a number of entries of both. We've had some lawyers over the years who are in that line of work, generally estate and that planning and stuff, but they have offshoots for animals, and there's at least one or two organizations, of course, I can't think of the name right now, that helps provide basically custom-made or pre-made templates for that, so you can specify exactly who's going to look after your animal. Because sometimes it's not just after you die. It's like if you get in a horrible accident, God forbid somebody blows a red light or something bad happens, and you're unable to care for that animal, then what happens if you don't have any specific instructions? So it's really important in a lot of ways that people just don't think about until it's a bit late.
And sadly, we see this in rescue a lot, where maybe the owner passed away and it was just them and the dog at the time they passed away, and or they went into a nursing home and the chances of them coming up or not coming back out are not very good.
Yeah.
And we've done some rescues like that. But again, when that happens, it happens rather suddenly. And if you don't have a family member or a good friend that's willing to take it, now what happens to the animal? And for a rescue like ours, if we don't have a foster home, I what am I going to do?
Yeah.
You know, that's the hardest part for me.
Yeah, and especially if there's no instructions or guidance in a situation like that, and yeah, which includes where it should go.
Right. Exactly.
So
we see that too much, frankly.
Yeah, no doubt. So fosters, how many fosters do you have currently? That is there like a network of fosters that you can go to, some who have dogs currently that they are fostering, some that maybe are between dogs, but you say, hey, if we get another one in, we can call Mary or we can call Joe? Or,
well, at this point in time, it's very, to be blunt, it's rather weak. We had a lot more in the past year or two. It was kind of built up during COVID because a lot of people were home and had time.
Right.
But unfortunately, some of them either went back to the office or they went traveling or whatever they did, their lives changed. And so there are people now that are just not doing it anymore. So our numbers are small now. We probably have available, actually right now today, I could only place one or two small dogs. I couldn't place any full-size dogs right now. And that's a tough situation, because
yeah,
over the time that we've been doing this, we've actually rescued a lot more big dogs than little dogs. And it's very frustrating for us because we're always begging for foster homes, but so are most other rescues too.
Yeah, no, it's almost a sort of a competitive market in a sense in that regard. But let me just let folks know again that the website is safepawsrescue.com. And so if you want to go there and look around at what they've got going and also see if how you can get involved, maybe you have some time to do some fostering, and it'd be super helpful. Obviously, it's critical to so many animals. And again, ultimately finding a home or a forever home. How often do these fosters, do the proverbial foster fail?
Actually, it's probably about 50 to 60%.
Yeah. The only thing that's unfortunate about that is it probably takes those fosters out of the loop for potential fostering next time, right?
Usually it does. We've had a few fosters, and we have two now that actually have two or three of our animals, and they've kind of halfway decided because of their little dogs with age and health conditions. We're still helping them support them, but they're probably going to end up being, that's probably going to be their final place they live. But everybody's got a limit. We have a couple of people that have six or seven dogs in their home.
Wow. Well, that's doing their share and then some, I would say. They got six or seven. That's great.
They're wonderful.
So one of the things we've talked about for the people who are able to step up and foster for Safe Paws Rescue is to get everything covered, all the food, all the toys, all the beds, veterinary care, and even, like I mentioned, that maybe a park or something that isn't as common to fostering for other organizations. If there's a behavioral issue, there can be a consultation with a behaviorist and try to help get that animal and that family squared away so they can stay put.
Oh, yeah, and training sessions.
That's really great. So anyway, to do all that, I'm sure no small money funds involved. So how does Safe Paws raise money, or how does it fund those kind of operations?
Well, there's multiple ways. One of them is just people hear about us. It might be word of mouth. It might be because of our website or our Facebook presence, or, social media. Mm-hmm. And people just read about us or hear about us and say, this sounds like a good cause. And it is a nonprofit, legally registered as a nonprofit. And so they donate money. And the way they can do that through the website. Some do a one-time donation. Some in our website, you can even go in there and donate so much every month automatically if you choose to.
Great.
We also do have a fee for an adoption, but it covers like usually anywhere from maybe 40% of what the actual cost of what we invest in an average dog. Because so many times the dogs we get, they need so much when we get them, including veterinary bills is one of our biggest, always our biggest expense, I should say. And then we also do fundraisers of various types. We try to have one big yard sale every year. It's usually going to be in the fall or winter when the weather's a little nicer for that, mm-hmm. cooler. And then we've got some other ones where we go to places like in St. Pete, they have what's called the Dog Bar.
Oh, yeah.
They invite us to come several times a year. And when we're there, we usually do raffles. And they offer us Jell-O shots, and we can sell those to patrons. And it's a fun time, too, because there are all these dogs running around playing and acting crazy.
Everybody's having fun.
Yeah. And then we have a big one coming up actually in October. It's our second annual, and it's called Pups and Pumpkins. Excuse me. It's our second annual fundraiser of this type. It's Sunday, October 13th from 1 to 4. And this is at another place in St. Pete called Pinellas Ale Works.
They're
brewery, and they do a lot for us. And we will have things like a dog costume contest. We'll have a silent auction. We'll have raffles. We'll have a 50-50 live music, dog treats. It's going to be a big party. And we did this last year, and it was very successful. And we'd love to see people come out with or without their dogs.
That's great. That sounds really good. Because another thing, too, that I know that's not a standard, some of the things we have talked about that you guys do as a rescue is, in addition to trying to place fosters and then, of course, place forever homes, those animals in forever homes, people that are having a little bit of a financial struggle at the moment who want to keep their dogs but are having trouble paying the bills or the vet bills or the food bills or whatever.
Yes.
You help out, how does that work? That seems really great to
usually it comes to us by word of mouth, but or people have heard of us, and so they reach out directly. But yeah,
so we sort of could apply for that if you found yourself in that circumstances where you're like, hey, I don't want to relinquish my my beloved dog, but we've gone, so and so lost his job, or whatever it might be, and they're just in financial, they're dire straits temporarily.
Right. The simplest thing, what we recommend that they do is just reach out to us via the email, which is safepaws.florida@gmail.com.
Okay.
And we've already doing a lot of that, as much as we can, I should say. We can never do it all, but there are people that reach out and we check out their situation, and we're supplying generally dog food and maybe preventatives or treats, or it depends kind of on their situation. We do ask them to try and do some contribution towards that.
Yeah.
And then occasionally we have people that have a veterinary situation and they're struggling to find a way to do it. And we can,
sure,
we tell them some other options, but if end result is sometimes we end up, we have actually a homeless lady is taking her dog at our expense to a vet tomorrow morning. One of my volunteers is transporting her. Of course, she doesn't have transportation.
Right.
And the dog is having a health issue, and we're hoping it's not too bad, but we're going to find out tomorrow morning.
Yeah, well, that's super kind, because a lot of people at first think, well, that's kind of odd to be helping a homeless person with an animal, but those are so pivotal to those people, and, it means everything, and sometimes it's just the one thing that's kind of keeping them hanging in there on any level.
Yeah.
It's really important to do that, even if it might seem like surprising to some at first. Let's see if we can take another call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Art.
Hi.
Hi, sorry, Art Shaw. Sorry, I want to make sure I didn't know if I had you on the line. Sorry, go ahead, please. You're on with Art Shaw from Safe Paws Rescue.
I actually foster a dog. I got into it by accident, and I was so hesitant because I already had pets at home, and I didn't think I had enough time because I work. I just didn't want to do it. And somebody that volunteers with the rescue told me all about it, and I felt it was really a great way to give back to the community and help animals, and I am so glad I did. It is so rewarding. It really is.
That's great. Well, God bless you for doing so and saying so.
That's Sharon.
Okay. All right.
Hi, Sharon. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for your call.
Bye.
So we're sort of nearing the end of our time here together, Art, but are there some specific dogs that are available to adopt that you want to discuss or give a little sales pitch on, or whatever the case may be?
Well, just before I do that briefly, I also want people to understand, and it's not that we can do all of them, but we are currently also helping 7 veterans with 8 dogs. They generally are either service dogs and or they are emotional support animals for military veterans that, they may have some kind of a military pension or disability issue with some money coming in, but a lot of times they need our help. And so we actually have about 7 of those, and we actually have one of my volunteers that takes care of that specifically, and we feel good about that, too.
That's great.
And as far as, right now we just show 3 on the website. There's always some dogs that are in process, we call it, that aren't officially ready for a home. But we have 3 dogs available right now. We have Amira, which is a beautiful white dog. These dogs are all on our website, by the way, safepawsrescue.com. Then we have Sasha, which is a black lab mix. And we also have Diamond, which is actually a medium-sized black dog that was was stray. It was kind of living outdoors, and they all have a story, but it would take me too long to go into all of them. But they've all been either dumped or let go or dumped somewhere, and we've saved them, and now they're ready for their forever homes.
That's great. All right, well, let's find them some homes, and let's find some more rescues and maybe some more volunteers and maybe a few more donations, all of which can be directed at safepawsrescue.com. And, of course, you can find out more about that fundraiser that Art just told us about. That I think that's already posted on Facebook, right? So
yes,
they can find out more details and make their plan.
Yeah,
and it's not until October, but we want people to plan ahead and make sure they can go and support the rescue.
And if they have any donations that they'd like us to use for a raffle, that would be great, too.
Well, that's a great idea, yeah. Great. Well, Art, well, thank you so much for joining us today and talking. We've been speaking with Art Shaw, the founder and director of Safe Paws Rescue. And again, one more time, the website is safepawsrescue.com. Thanks for all the great work you've been doing on behalf of our dog friends. I really appreciate it. And
thank you for having me, Duncan.
Absolutely. Let's hope we drum up a few more people to help Safe Paws do more helping of their own. So, in a moment, I'll speak with Keith Overton, owner of OCC Roadhouse and Museum in Clearwater, the location of Pet Adoption Sunday. An afternoon featuring vendors, raffles, and adoptable animals. That's this Sunday, August 11th at OCC Roadhouse and Museum. More on that in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Meanwhile, right now, though, we're going to step into the Comedy Corner with a piece by Kellen Erskine called On Penguins in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
Acupuncture for pets. I would love to go to a pet acupuncturist with a porcupine. Just for that walk back to the waiting room, like, I don't know what they did to my cat. It's the last time I use a Groupon. My favorite animal is the penguin. I just feel bad for them. Penguins are the reason why I don't completely believe in the theory of evolution. Because evolution says that an animal will either die off or adapt comfortably to its environment. I just don't think they belong in Antarctica. They seem cold. Like, go to the LA Zoo. They don't keep them in a freezer. They're on cement and they're fine. Every other animal in the South Pole has at least 15 inches of blubber or fur to keep it warm. You ever seen a penguin walk? They walk the same way you would if you were wearing cold, wet pants. This is completely true. Every year in Antarctica, penguins walk 80 miles round trip for food, if you believe Morgan Freeman. Here's where evolution gets shady. If these poor animals have been walking 80 miles every year for the past 10 million years, why don't they have knees yet? Their wings haven't worked out for some reason. Can they at least get some bendy legs? You ever see them do that thing where they slide on their bellies into the ocean? They never mean to do that. They just trip and they're like, well, I can't get up. Guess I'll learn how to swim too. I'm a bird.
That was Kellen Erskine in today's Comedy Corner with a piece called On Penguins, taken from his appearance on Dry Bar Comedy. Now it's time to speak with Keith Overton, owner of OCC Roadhouse and Museum in Clearwater, which is hosting Pet Adoption Sunday. And to hear more about the event happening, that's this very Sunday, August 11th. Here's Keith Overton on Talking Animals on WNF. Good morning, Keith.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
Thank you for having me.
For sure. So for those unfamiliar with the venue, maybe you could briefly describe OCC Roadhouse and Museum.
Sure. It's the largest restaurant and entertainment venue in the Tampa Bay area. We are the most pet-friendly of all of those venues. We have an outdoor space that's 25,000 square feet, two band stages. We have three pool tables. There's no charge to play those. Two sawdust shuffleboard tables. No charge to play those. And we just have a great, great space for everyone. And as you know, in Florida, animals that are not service animals are not allowed inside restaurants. And so we kind of took the dining outside to them. We have a total of about 600 seats, and about 400 of them are outside under this pavilion. We have seven big-ass fans up on the ceiling. We have a coated floor that keeps the animals cool. And, you know, about once a quarter, we do a pet adoption day where we bring in a couple of the local no-kill shelters and agencies that try to get, you know, pets permanent homes. And folks can bring their own animals in and walk around and visit the venue. And we have, you know, dozens of vendors that people can purchase merchandise from. We have music playing. It's a really fun event. A lot of times we'll bring in, like, wiener dog races or petting zoos. It's a family-friendly day and certainly a pet lover's day.
Sure sounds great. And clearly adoptions, given the name of the event, Pet Adoption Sunday, are kind of a major part of this. How many rescues or adoptable animals do you expect to have this Sunday there?
You know, it varies. You know, as you know, these animals are available for adoption every day. So, you know, today they may say they have 10 coming, and three or four may get adopted before Sunday. And, you know, we certainly don't want to hold that up. So we try not to market a specific number.
Okay.
But, I mean, we typically have, you know, between 5 and 20 animals that are here. And then, of course, you know, if you have an interest, you can talk to the organizers that are with each of the groups that are here, and they may have something back at the shelter that fits what you're looking for as well. So it's
sure.
an opportunity for people to connect with them, let them get them an understanding of what it is you're looking for. If it's not something that's right in front of you, you know, there's not a connection made on that spot, then maybe there's a way they can find a pet that's better suited for you back at the facility.
That's great. And since you're clearly, since you own the place, you're clearly an animal lover. How long have you been doing these events of the Pet Adoption Sunday or other animal-friendly events?
Well, what we found is that the pets, particularly the dogs, they're better behaved than the people most of the time.
So you need fewer bouncers for these events, I guess, right?
Yeah, we don't need to trespass or evict any of those guys. But no, you know, if you ever watched the TV show American Chopper on Discovery for many years, you know, Paul Sr. is my licensing partner in the deal, and the restaurant's kind of themed around his, you know, the lifestyle of the motorcycle community.
Yeah.
But a big part of the show, a big fiber of the show, was that he's probably the biggest pet rescue person I know. He's got a 10-acre farm up in Brooksville, and he literally has hundreds of animals that he cares for that, you know, are all rescues that he's taken in. Many of them are, you know, injured and maimed and, you know, disabled in some ways.
Yeah.
And he's a huge lover of rescue with regards to animals. So, like, one of our wall features within the restaurant and our wall history has all of the animals over the years that he's adopted and rescued. So it's pretty cool. And yes, we've been doing it. We've been open for 3 years, and we've been doing it ever since we opened. It's been a part of, you know, our event schedule. Once a quarter, roughly, is what we do. And, you know, it's a great time. We're very friendly to the pets.
Yeah.
Not only from a standpoint of the way we treat them, but the facility has been designed in a way that it's really conducive for them to have a good time here. We have a nice little grassy area out back. When they have to go to the restroom, we can take them there. And we, by the way, we're not just welcoming pets on Pet Adoption Day. They're welcome for every event we do, for anything and everything we do. You'll never come here and not see a dog or a bird, or, you know, we have skunks.
Wow.
That bring skunks.
Okay.
Here.
Well, that's the place to be if you're an animal, whatever event's going on. That's the place, not just this Sunday, but generally speaking.
That's right.
That's cool. Well, Keith, we're just about out of time here, but let's just hit the kind of key highlights for this Sunday. So it's this Sunday, August 11th. I think it gets underway around noon.
Yeah, it'll go from about noon to 4.
Yeah.
Parking is free. Bring your animals and come have lunch with us and hang out and have a great day.
That's so great. And they can find out more on OCC Roadhouse website or your socials,
yep.
I'm sure.
OCCRoadhouse.com. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram. A lot of good stuff on there.
That's so great. All right. Well, I hope it's a smash success. And thanks for all your good work on behalf of animals. And thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Take
Thank
care.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Thanks a lot. Coming up on WNF, it's The Conversation. Great show hosted by Mario Nunez and Joe King Carter. After that, we shift back to music program with Jim Bannon holding forth from 1 to 3, followed by, I believe today, Grant Hart is in for Nancy C, hosting the Wednesday Traffic Jam from 3 to 6 p.m., at which point our terrific Wednesday night block of Latin music kicks back in. Meanwhile, on this show at the moment, as the prize for naming that animal tune, I'll be offering something fabulous from the Talking Animals Vault to the first person who calls 813-239-9663. And it correctly identifies this animal song. It's named an animal tune. I'm Talking Animals on WMNF.
Showed us the sun, but not as bright in life as the real.
Hamilton. We'll probably take your guests off the air because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Next Wednesday, August 14th, my guest will be Mark DeVries, the filmmaker whose previous documentary was Speciesism, and his new doc is Humans and Other Animals. So we'll talk all about that next Wednesday, the 14th, here on Talking Animals on WMNF. I invite you to join me for that. I also invite you to visit talkinganimals.net. For audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast, Apple Podcasts are available there too, as well as other podcast platforms. There are also links to our social media pages, etc. You can also subscribe to our newsletter to find out more about the show and find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand, a little sneak preview. So that's all at talkinganimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Wiki Wachee, and beyond. NPR News coming up shortly, headlines, and then the conversation right after that, and more great programming with music starting back up at 1 o'clock with Jim Bannon and beyond. Thanks so much. It's Talking Animals on WMNF. Thank you.